Thanks for joining us this morning. On the phone we have, before I introduce our guests, we have Paul coming on to make an announcement. Paul, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Sherry.
Okay.
Hopefully you can hear me.
I can hear you. Tell us what's going on.
Yes, Sherry. First of all, good morning to all KBY listeners. And once again, thanks, Sherry, for having me once again on your show, Law Matters. So my name is Paul, and we at AFCEA International, which Sherry is part of, we are inviting everyone for a full day of collaboration, mentorship, and, of course, cybersecurity. So this features government and defense industry subject matter experts who will address today's cyber threats and how to defend against it. So basically, we are having the fifth annual Cyber Southwest Symposium on August 28th, which is from 7:45 to 4:30. And Sherry, if your listeners ask the question, yes, it's free.
It's free.
For more information, yes. It is free. And also, if you want more information, please visit ndiasw.org. That is ndiasw.org.
Or you can also go to the lawmatters1030.org website. We have a link there, and there are flyers there. It's a beautiful flyer, and everybody should attend this. It's really important. We're talking cybersecurity. Everybody has a computer, a telephone. Everybody needs to know what's going on to protect themselves. Paul, I thank you for calling in. I appreciate you finding a place where we could hear you.
Yes, finally.
Okay, you have a good day, and our next guest is Sheriff Mark Napier. How are you?
Good morning, Sherry. I'm fine. I'm sorry I'm not in the studio. I usually like to come in, but Marlene and I are babysitting our 9-month-old grandson, so I'm staying a little closer to home to be with them. She's a nurse, as you know, and she's had very few days off, so we haven't seen much of each other in the last month or so. And so I'm staying a little closer to home to be with Eli and Marlene this morning.
Well, very good. I understand. A lot of people have been calling in, even though we're allowed to have some people in the studio now because we wear masks and everything's sanitized. But in your situation, you haven't seen your family members in a while, so it makes sense.
Yeah, it's just been very busy. You know, Marlene being a nurse, the nursing is obviously very, very busy, and they're short of staff. And then between being sheriff and running a political campaign, I've been pretty busy as well.
Let's talk about this. I know when you became sheriff, there was some things going on with the department before you got there, and you asked for an investigation or somebody to continue this investigation. Tell me the background of what's going on with that.
Well, what happened was, before I took office, there was a federal investigation conducted by the FBI into illegal expenditures of RICO money. Now, RICO are anti-racketeering funds, which we're allowed to seize to thwart the efforts of drug cartels and other criminal organizations. Well, that money, by federal guidelines, is only supposed to be spent for efforts that support law enforcement. Well, over a period of many, many years under the prior administrations, that money was directed toward things that were completely outside the federal guidelines and, in fact, proven to be illegal. So it resulted in the indictment of the second in command of the agency, that being Chris Radke, and he pled out some misdemeanor charges for purchasing things for a cafe and things for his office and stuff that is just completely outside the norm. When I took office, there was still this buzz about that maybe some people had escaped justice, perhaps there were state laws that could have been broken with respect to this conduct that had not been uncovered.
So
I went to the Attorney General and asked for a second state-level investigation, which took them almost 3 years to complete. We got that investigation back. It did not determine that any current member of the Pima County Sheriff's Department had acted in any way that was illegal. It was a pretty stunning indictment on the conduct of the prior administrations. And I think it's important to note that even though some former sheriffs would like you to believe that they are just they don't know anything about this. It's completely news to them. Federal guidelines clearly say that the agency head is responsible. No RICO expenditure has occurred in the last 3.5+ years I've been sheriff that I've not signed off on. Even if I don't sign off on it, let's say I delegate that to one of my chiefs, I am still, by federal guidelines, ultimately responsible. So for somebody to claim ignorance is really a weak thing, especially when they've been in the agency for 30 years. So we've kind of put that behind us. We now know that there are no state charges, that the federal investigation was properly conducted, and a second review occurred by the state attorney general's office. And it was important to me to restore public confidence in the department.
Very good. Yeah, I remember it was about a month ago when the report came out, and I was a little confused by it because I didn't realize an investigation was still happening. But kudos to you for asking for that investigation just to make sure the rumor mill, because I remember the rumors going around too, was cleared up.
Yeah, it needed to be, Sherry. I mean, the public's trust in law enforcement must be maintained, and so I had another stone I could turn over, and only really one available to me, and that was to request that the state conduct a independent and secondary investigation to the federal investigation, which they did, and it took nearly 3 years. I was in contact with the Attorney General's office very frequently over that period of time, and honestly, a little bit disappointed it took that long. But rather than continue to nag them and say, come on, hurry up, and be appearing to guide their work, I said, look, I just need to know when this is done. And it went through the process. But it took them about 3 years to go through all those records. Because remember, we're talking about more than a decade of financial records, review of the prior federal investigation. It simply took a long time to get done. And I'm glad that that report has been finalized. Certainly appreciative of Mark Bronovich and his staff that would make themselves available to conduct an investigation of something that had already been investigated, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's nice to have an outside entity doing what they need to do.
Absolutely. Completely independent of the Sheriff's Department and the federal government as well.
So let's talk about your department. I've had some of your guys on. Search and Rescue is amazing. I've had them on a couple of times, and just hearing what they go through and some of the things that they have to do their job and save people who find themselves in a bad situation. These are amazing people, and all those volunteers, oh my gosh, you are one lucky guy.
Well, the Pima County residents are the lucky ones, because when you engage in really irresponsible hiking behavior, or you're even being very responsible and you are out there and you get injured, these people put their lives on the line to come out and rescue you. I will almost bet that we'll be doing rescues today, that somebody's sitting around home right now drinking their coffee, and about 10 o'clock they'll decide, why don't I go for a hike to Seven Falls? And they'll take a 16-ounce bottle of water with them, and about 2 o'clock we'll be being called because they'll be suffering heat-related illness, and they'll need to be rescued. It still amazes me that some people engage in what is really, by any measure, irresponsible behavior with respect to hiking. I love the desert. I love hiking. We live in a beautiful part of the country, but you know, it's going to be 110 degrees today, and if you're not exceptionally physically fit and well hydrated and carry a lot of water with you, it is simply not safe to be out hiking around.
So you're telling me to stay home?
Well, I'm saying if you're going to hike, do it very early. Hydrate, let people know where you're going. You make sure your cell phone is completely charged and that you have adequate water. And then also measure your own physical fitness. I mean, we have some people that are certainly not athletes that go out and hike way over their head in a lot of heat. And if you're not acclimated to being outside frequently in the heat, your body doesn't respond very well to it. That's in that true. Same vein, Sherry, if I can, one of the things that we're doing is we're forming a rural district out at Robles Junction, and those deputies that will be deployed out there will be cross-certified in search and rescue, because we spend a lot of time and effort in the Tucson metro area with our search and rescue assets, but there is a definite search and rescue mission out in the rural area, the western part of our county, because we have so many migrants that come up through, you know, along the Tonalatam Reservation and through Sasabe Arawaka area, who get lost in the desert, they call us for assistance, and our assistance sometimes is a long ways away. So when we get up and running with that district, we'll have 10 deputies out there that will be cross-certified in search and rescue, and we hope to save some lives of these migrants that are abandoned by the bandits and coyotes out there and end up, many of them, far too many of them, dying in the desert.
So Robles Junction is located where?
Well, it's basically three points, about midway between the Tucson metro area and Ajo. We have an existing facility there. I got federal funding through a COPS grant to hire 10 additional deputies.
Awesome.
And we're overhiring a lieutenant and two sergeants. So that has long been a gap in the service that we provide the county, because it's between the western edge of Metro Tucson and then the Tonalatam Reservation and then out to Ajo. Well, it's kind of been a dead space in the way that we serve the county. Well, now we'll actually have a foothold out there. We'll have deputies, sergeants, and a lieutenant, and they will be able to provide much better service to Arawaka, Sasabe, Three Points, all that area along the Tonalatam Reservation and then out toward Ajo. So we'll have much more robust presence there. We'll be better able to address the transnational crime threats coming up there, which is drug and human trafficking, and just provide better service to the ranchers and that border area.
Could the Stone Garden funds have helped you with that mission?
They could have, with respect to providing overtime funding for additional deployment out there. But what was the linchpin in this was the ability to get a COPS grant to hire the 10 additional deputies. That was really what helped us with this operation. And the fact that we already had a facility there was also extremely helpful.
So you have a grant writer somewhere, don't you?
Yes, we have a captain who's dedicated to overseeing that and a grant staff. You have to be able to apply for these grants and make a convincing case. Like all law enforcement agencies, we get a lot of funding through grants. And so we've got to be very much putting our face out there. We're a major county law enforcement agency, and we should be pinging the federal government for additional support.
Absolutely. And we're looking for a grant writer. Do you have any suggestions?
Somebody that you've got to be a little bit more than just a good writer. You've got to understand the criteria of how grants are awarded. I've served, worked for the Department of Justice on three separate occasions as a peer reviewer on federal grant programs. And what a peer reviewer does is gets a bundle of grants and then makes a recommendation to the federal government about what grants should be funded and which ones shouldn't. So I've looked literally at hundreds of grants in that capacity, and I'll tell you that good grant writers get awards and bad grant writers don't. And so when you apply for a grant, there's going to be specific conditions that the awarding agency is going to look at. And I was always surprised to see that there might be eight criteria that were clearly listed on the solicitation that you must address these eight things, and you're limited to, say, 5 pages or 6 pages of text, and somebody would submit something that would only address 7 or 6 of those 8 criteria, well, you're not going to get funded.
Right.
So you really have to be conscious of what the grant is asking and make sure that you follow all the criteria on the solicitation in order to be awarded funds. And I've been fortunate to have experience looking at hundreds of those in working with the Department of Justice. So I do know what tends to get funded. What's unfortunate in law enforcement is that the New York City Police Department may be have somebody on staff that they're paying $150,000 a year to write grants. And, of course, they write a great grant proposal. And then the Bug Tussle Police Department, who says to Bubba, well, Bubba, you know, you got some college there. Would you try to write this grant? Well, they try their very best, and they might have a program that we really should fund because it's really meaningful to that small community. But the grant proposal is so poorly written, it can't get funded, whereas New York City might get millions of dollars that who knows where that goes, and a little department that's requesting $10,000 that would make a tremendous difference. That won't get funded, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Law Matters Live show airs Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, Jim Fuda, Director of Law Enforcement Training with Crime Stoppers International, will talk to us about current events. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
With monsoon season well underway, the Tucson Fire Department would like you to keep these tips in mind on how to stay safe. Turn around, don't drown. Driving through a mere 8 inches of water can move your vehicle and cause you to be swept away. When thunder roars, head indoors. When you see that lightning flash and hear thunder, you need to drop what you're doing and head inside. When in doubt, wait it out. Save your errands for after storms have passed through your area. Remember, Tucson Fire is here for you. Stay safe.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Sheriff Mark Napier. If you have any questions, the number is 790-2040. I want to talk about this police reform thing that's going on. What are your thoughts and what's happening with the county?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on that. We could do a whole show on law enforcement reform. the thing I'm really proud about is that we're ahead of the curve at the Pima County Sheriff's Department. We really are. In fact, we're getting national attention for that. We came up with our reform plan, our local reform plan, which we're calling the ACT plan, which ACT is an acronym for accountability, community engagement, and transparency, which is a good foundation. There are good pillars for law enforcement reform. So we're working through that plan. One element we're really excited about, I just got briefed on yesterday, is in the area of transparency. One of the things that we looked at is that a lot of people have reservations or uncertainty or distrust in law enforcement because we're not transparent. And transparent is an overused word, but in this case, it's a good word. So Monday, probably by the middle of the day, we'll launch on our main landing page of the Pima County Sheriff's Department's webpage our community accountability page. And on that will be almost anything you could ever want to know about our department, our budget, our demographics, our disciplinary history, our use of force history, use of force policies, all these things that if you'd come to us 6 months ago and asked for, we would have said, well, complete a public records request. Well, that's a poor way of doing it. These are public records anyway. Why not push them right out and be transparent? So we're going to be doing that. I'll be going to the Board of Supervisors to a request to hire what we're going to call community engagement specialist. These folks will be not badge and gun type folks, but people that have at least an undergraduate degree in social work, sociology, psychology, or similar academic discipline. And they'll be deployed out in the county in two-person units to respond to those calls that don't require a deputy. There's no enforcement nexus to this call, but somebody calls 911 for assistance and we're obligated to go. Well, there's an adage that if the only tool you have in your toolbox is a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. Well, to some extent, deputies don't have a lot of tools in their toolbox. So for substance abuse calls or some mental health calls, incorrigible children, some of these calls at group homes, they require a public safety response, but they're never going to require, almost never going to require any enforcement action. So why not have a better tool in our toolbox? And that's these community engagement specialists. So I'll be asking the Board of Supervisors for an additional appropriation to fund those positions. We're also going to be launching a citizen review panel, which will help us review serious discipline and serious use of force issues to give us a citizen perspective on those things, which is so very important because I see the world through the lens of somebody who's been a law enforcement officer for 3 decades. I can't see the world through the lens of an African-American or a person of color or a person of significantly socioeconomically disadvantaged background. So having people from those backgrounds help us to review these very serious events, give their perspective, help us to better understand that perspective, and maybe even help us help them better understand what we do, can only make us better. So we're really proud of what we're rolling out. We're ahead of the curve. I was on a national WebEx call about 2 weeks ago, and there were more than 500 people on the WebEx, congressional staffers, Senate staffers, law enforcement leaders from all over the country, wanting to hear about what we're doing here in Pima County. And I'm really proud of that. We're leading the way on this. Now, you mentioned the national focus, and your listeners should be alarmed by this. There is a drive in Washington, D.C. right now that we must do something. And both Republicans and Democrats are falling into this trap. We've got to do something. We've got to do something. Well, every time Washington, D.C. feels like it's got to do something and do it fast, they do the wrong thing and can never undo it. There's a lot of talk about national standards, national accreditation. These are troublesome. We don't have a national police force, and there's a reason for that. Because we want localized control over law enforcement. Pima County is not Portland or Washington, D.C. or Atlanta. We're unique, and you elect a sheriff to be your law enforcement representative, not somebody back in Washington, D.C. to tell you how to operate. One of the things I've told my Democrat friends that say, well, no, we need these national standards because we've got to hold police accountable. Well, I just explained to them, well, let's say that 3 administrations down the road, we have a president that makes Donald Trump look like a left-wing liberal. Are you still comfortable with him and that administration setting law enforcement standards for your community? Well, they say, of course not. Well, I'm not either. You know, it's bad policy. So we need to stay on top of those things. We talked about grants. One of the problems is that they're going to tie some of these national standards to grants. In other words, if you don't adhere to these standards, which may not fit for your community very well at all, then you may not be eligible or you will have a disadvantage applying for grants. That's where Washington, D.C. puts a hammer to these things. So it's very, very worrisome to me as somebody who's been in this business for a long time. I don't think we want national standards to local law enforcement.
No, I don't think so either, and I've expressed on the show many times when they were talking about we have to build a wall, I had all the sheriffs across the American and Mexican border on the show, and each one of them said, this will work in my area, but a wall won't, or a wall will work in my area, but not the whole area, and it's different. You have to go to the source and find out, what do you need, because your area is unique to you. You know, like you said, we're not Chicago.
Absolutely. You know, your point about the wall is right. I got beat up by the Republicans because when I took office, all we were hearing is the wall, the wall, the wall, as if that one thing would fix everything. Well, that is, in fact, a medieval solution to a modern problem, thinking you're going to erect a wall, walk away from it, and everything will be fixed. Well, there are places along the 2,000-mile international border that will never have what we would consider to be a wall or a physical barrier due to topography, land use, and those things. Do we need physical barriers? Yes, we do. They work in certain places. But you're going to need technology and human resources. So you need a multifaceted approach to engage in real border security. And I think you're good friends, as I am, with Sheriff Daniels and Sheriff Wilmot. The three of us try to make that case to Washington, D.C. all the time, that this is not a one-size-fits-all thing, that you need to listen to your local experts. And really, the local experts, aside from our federal partners, are the sheriffs.
Exactly. Exactly. And the sheriffs know what's going on in their communities. So that's the voice. And I like what you're talking about doing, having, you know, the civilian review and the community engagement. I think that's a big part of what we need so we don't turn into what's going on in Chicago and what's going on in some of these other areas, Seattle, Portland, and some of the riots. I don't know if they've stopped yet. You don't really see a lot of that in the news, but last week we had a journalist on. Was it last week? A journalist on, and he had sent us some of his videos that we've got on our website, and it was pretty horrific. And what I was looking at, to me, translated into domestic terrorism, because it had nothing to do with Black Lives Matter or anybody else's life mattering. It had to do with, let's tear the place up.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, and this may seem odd coming from me, but should there be reform? Yes. And are segments of our community angry and upset with law enforcement? Absolutely. Do they have reason? Yes, to the large degree they do. But we're not going to advance any of that by burning buildings down.
True.
Or throwing bottles at police officers, or worse, what they've been doing in Portland is shining high-powered lasers into the eyes of law enforcement officers, some of which has resulted in permanent vision damage. How does that advance the cause of peaceful change? It doesn't. And we need to reject this. We need to embrace what our founding fathers embraced, which is the right to lawfully assemble, the right to approach government for redress of grievances. All those things are constitutionally protected. There is no constitutional protection for burning buildings down, property damage, assaults, and those things. And it just erodes any support the broader community will ever have for the message, which is important. It is. Law enforcement needs to be better at a lot of things. I mean, it's certainly changed a lot since I started in 1981, and I suspect over the next 20 years it'll change again a lot. But we need to sit down at the table and talk about these things. What you know, you're not going to defund the police. That's crazy. Or abolish the police. That's nonsense. So let's throw these nonsense things off the table and say, what do we really need to do? And what I've said is, look, I need more resources. And that's where we're going to go with the community engagement specialist. I need more resources, not less, to police you and provide service for you in the manner in which you're asking me to do it. And that just makes sense to me. But we're not going to get it by burning buildings down.
I had to laugh about there was a photo of a guy holding a sign that said, defund the police. And then he found himself in danger. Some bad actors were coming towards him, and he's yelling, call the police. So, you know, it was like, you can't have both ways.
No, you can't. And some of the communities of color and the lower economically or the economically disadvantaged portions of our community call the police most frequently because they're victims of crime and they have community disorder that requires law enforcement response, or they call us. So we need to be more sensitive to their needs, but at the same time, we need to realize that for the history of this country and for more than several hundred years, there has been a need and a place for local law enforcement. We just need to get with the community and redefine what that mission is. But we need to do that by sitting and talking and listening to each other, not by engaging in violence. That does nothing to help the message of Black Lives Matter or any of these groups that would desire police reform.
Yeah, and I listened to some of these videos that the journalist, Chuck is his name, sent over. And in one of them, he said, who are you with? He's trying to ask these people, who are you with that, you know, they're rioting? And the one response was the KKK. Well, what does that have to do with Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, it's an erosion of the message, and that's unfortunate because I do believe that Black Lives Matter, and I think that, you know, we have degraded that over time. But the current movement is not about that. It's about, you know, civil disobedience and violence and stuff. And I think that that message should be taken back and should be made whole again, so that we can look at the way that people of color are treated in society as a whole, and with racial and socioeconomic inequalities, but also how law enforcement could more effectively deal with those segments of our community. That's very important, and it's being lost in the violence and burning of buildings and these things, where you just continue to create this animosity between law enforcement and what would be and should be a legitimate message.
Are you familiar? Of course you are. The Brady List.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Okay. I was under the impression once a law enforcement or an officer of any military included, was put on the Brady list, that they were not to be hired in anybody else's police department or, you know, job type that would include law enforcement. What is the Brady list exactly?
Well, it's kind of, it's evolved into, you know, what's called now a Rule 15.1 disclosure. And that means that there is a disclosable reason that the prosecution would need to convey to the defense that there may be a question of credibility with respect to the law enforcement officer testifying. So if you were found to be guilty of dishonesty, or you had engaged in dishonesty or other behaviors that would erode your credibility as a law enforcement officer, the prosecution is required under Rule 15.1 to disclose that to the defense, because it's exculpatory information. So, yes, you know, if you probably should not be hired by another law enforcement agency if you're on Rule 15.1. However, it does not mean you can't testify in court. It simply means that there is something that has to be disclosed to the defense. So it's not a blanket, you can never be a cop again. What it says is there's been a finding that you have been dishonest or engaged in other behavior that would undermine your credibility as a witness, and that must be disclosed in any court proceedings.
So that would have applied to Furman in the OJ case?
Yes. He was clearly not truthful under oath. So he would have been, I don't think the rule existed, and I'm not sure the California rules, but Rule 15.1 would have applied to his testimony, because he was clearly untruthful in the way that he testified.
Okay. I was just wondering, because I've heard people, I know it's been around since, what, the Civil War? The Brady list has been around since then?
It's been around a long time. It's new evolution in Arizona's Rule 15.1.
Okay. As, you know, I know it's been around, and I know of a officer who was put on the Brady list. And then I turned around, he was working for a different agency. I'm like, wait a minute. It's not cool.
Yeah, well, we need to be a little bit more sharing of information. And there's some of the police reform stuff that does address that, is making sure that we don't allow bad pennies to be passed about, because you've got some of these law enforcement officers that go somewhere and they commit bad acts, and then they leave before they can get fired. They go somewhere else, commit bad acts, and they run around like that, especially from one state to the next. I think in Arizona we do a really good job through Arizona Post of heading that off. But if somebody comes from Indiana or Ohio or someplace and then comes to Arizona and then goes to California, sometimes it's a little more difficult to track that. So we need good background investigations when we're thinking about hiring these lateral entry people.
Okay. I'm glad you cleared that up, because it's something that's been on my mind. And, you know, I didn't know who to ask, but you're the history buff.
I love American history. That's when I have recreational reading time, I read American history, and I love that. Grant's biography by Ron Chernow is a fantastic book. It's about 1,000 pages. It's a slog to get through, but it's wonderful. It's a wonderful history of Grant, and amazing figure in history. I could talk about history books, because that's pretty much all I read when I recreationally read. But Grant is an amazing figure in history, as is Lincoln. Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin, another excellent book. Ron Chernow also wrote the book Washington, which is I don't like as well as Grant's book, but it's nonetheless a pretty good book. There's several. April 1864 is another really, or April 1865, another really good book about a very incredible month in American history. End of the Civil War, Lincoln's assassinated. You know, it's just a really, really good history. And people should know their history.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you don't know your history, unfortunately, it repeats itself. You have
to
learn.
Well, we're seeing the desire to do away with our history. We need to be honest about our history.
Yes.
This country was founded with slavery in place. We need to be honest about that. I believe it was Jefferson that said, You know, slavery is like having a wolf by the ears. You hate it, but you dare not let it go. And so this country was founded. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights were founded, and slavery existed. You know, so we got to be honest about that and honest about the founding of our country, not try to tear that down, not try to abolish it from our memory, but learn from that memory of, you know, what can we learn from this? And look at these people in history and say, okay, what can we learn about our past and to make us a better country and a better people?
Exactly. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a few. Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Law Matters Live show airs Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, Jim Fuda, Director of Law Enforcement Training with Crime Stoppers International, will talk to us about current events. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
With monsoon season well underway, the Tucson Fire Department would like you to keep these tips in mind on how to stay safe. Turn around, don't drown. Driving through a mere 8 inches of water can move your vehicle and cause you to be swept away. When thunder roars, head indoors. When you see that lightning flash and hear thunder, you need to drop what you're doing and head inside. When in doubt, wait it out. Save your errands for after storms have passed through your area. Remember, Tucson Fire is here for you. Stay safe.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Sheriff Mark Napier, and we've been talking about everything, actually. What's happening with Pima County right now? Have you made any good arrests, newsworthy?
My border interdiction unit, they're just amazing. Sergeant Pat Hilliger and his team. Just the other day, they did a traffic stop, and it was an amazing seizure of a dope, multiple pounds of methamphetamine. It's just incredible what they're doing out there. And it's the volume is what just is amazing to me. It used to be if you interdicted a couple of ounces of methamphetamine, that was considered a big deal. And just this past week they got 87 pounds of methamphetamine in a vehicle our community. 87 pounds. That's shocking.
Yes.
Was concealed in a vehicle. Now, the thing I tell my peer sheriffs across the country is I'm very possessive of Pima County in that we keep resources here. And sheriffs will tell me, but Sheriff, you don't understand. I've got people dying of overdoses in my community. And I tell them, well, look, you don't understand. If I can stop it in my backyard, people don't die in your front yard. This methamphetamine wasn't going to stay in Pima County. 87 pounds, we're not going to consume that here in Pima County. That was going who knows where,
right.
Back east where it's more profitable. So we're a major conduit for drugs like that. And, we did another seizure just the other day of, I think it was 10 or 13 pounds. This is almost like a daily thing. A lot of hard drugs are coming up through the border. One of the really neat things on a positive note that we're doing is our department is partnering with the JTED program, especially at Sunnyside High School. And what we're trying to do is provide a life path for kids that might not otherwise have a very defined life path. So we're providing an educational program that we'll have in the high school. We'll send our personnel down to teach elective courses. And then upon graduation from high school, if they've completed these electives, that we'll set up for them while they're going through their high school education. And when they turn 18, we will remove all the barriers. We'll make it as simple as possible to be hired as a corrections officer in our detention facility. And the current base pay, starting pay for a corrections officer is $21.50 an hour with full benefits. Well, in Pima County, that is a very good wage. It really is. And we're having some of these high school kids that we're introducing to this program saying, "Are you kidding me? My dad doesn't make that much money." And so we're trying to provide a life path for, you know, people of color, people that are in more impoverished areas of our community that might not otherwise think they have good opportunity. And we'll bring them into our detention facility at 18. If they give me 3 good years of service at age 21, we will fast-track them, make it very easy for them to become a deputy. And starting deputy pay is $25.50 an hour. So we're trying to reach down. Recruiting is very challenging right now. Can you imagine with all the national stuff going on of a young person sitting saying, "I think I'd like to be a police officer"?
No. I mean, and we've talked about that, because in some of these riot areas, they're throwing flammable liquids at law enforcement and then lighting fireworks and throwing it at them, trying to light them on fire.
Yeah. And then, well, if you're a person of color and you're hearing that all law enforcement is racist, do you feel like that's a welcoming home for you to start your career life? Well, of course not. So we need to go down to the high schools and develop relationships that early to recruit for, it's not going to bear fruit for 3 or 4 or 5 years, but you have to start.
Yes.
You can't put your head in the sand. There are some that think that there's a bubble around Pima County, that you never go outside of your own jurisdiction, and that's just crazy. It's nuts. I have relationships all over the state and all over the country, because what affects Pima County sometimes comes from a state level, sometimes it comes from a national level. You have to be involved in these things. It's just insane to me to think that you would think that nothing outside of Pima County has any impact on Pima County. So I have good relationships up in Phoenix. I have relationships in Washington, D.C. I have great relationships with many of the major county sheriffs. For example, when we were just revising our pursuit policy because we realized that it needed to be updated, I sent out a quick message to my peers, and I think within a week we had 40 policies, pursuit policies, from the largest sheriff's departments in the United States that we could look at to model ours off of, because I have good professional relationships with sheriffs all over the country. This just benefits our department immensely. And in that vein of relationships, I would like to say that this past week we have a new Mexican consul here in our region. And Rafael Durazo came to visit me this past week. I've had a extraordinarily positive relationship with the Mexican consul since I took office. Prior sheriffs never reached out to the Mexican consul, which was really surprising to me. But we had a great meeting, established good lines of communication, because there's a lot of interaction between the Mexican consul and my department. And I got to tell you, they're just wonderful people. They have some of the same concerns that all of us do with respect to border issues and migrant traffic, and having those relationships and those lines of communication are critical to public safety here in our county.
Oh, absolutely. We've got people being coyotes, bringing people and dumping them at the border, saying those lights over there are Phoenix, when it's like Sierra Vista or something even closer.
Yeah.
And they're getting injured in the desert. These people have to be identified.
Well, it's just reprehensible that we have, in some political circles, demonized these people that are coming across the border. Sure, they should come across legally. I get that. I do. But I'm sorry, folks, if you woke up this morning in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, or parts of Mexico, you might be making a very desperate decision. You might say, in order to provide for my family, in order to provide for my safety, I have to try to come to the United States. And there isn't a good way to do that legally. It takes a long time. It's onerous. And so people, just like you and I might, decide to try to come here without proper documentation, come here illegally, but then they're victimized by the drug cartels financially. Women are sexually victimized, they're criminally victimized, and then they're victimized at the hands of the environment. And as a Christian and humanitarian, you know, I find that intolerable.
It is intolerable. And, you know, my mom was the only member of her family born in America. Everybody else is still in England, in Ireland, in Australia. And my grandfather really wanted her to be here. So he came here legally, served in the military, did what he needed to do, and then everybody decided to go back to England. So my mother was left here. But.
Yeah, it's just it's a humanitarian issue, and I'm proud of the fact that I drafted the border security statement for Arizona sheriffs, which has been adopted by Western state sheriffs and embraced by the National Sheriffs Association. And the three reasons that we engage in border security as sheriffs are very clear. It's public safety, national security, and human rights. And human rights is an important part of why we need to secure our southern border. And we lose that national dialogue. We talk about public safety and terrorism and all those things, but we forget about the plight of human beings that are being victimized. And then worse, some people try to demonize those people as if they're some subhuman race or something. No, they're people just like us. They're just like us. And they're making decisions that probably you or I would make under similar circumstance. They are entering this country illegally, and that needs to be addressed. And it is being addressed. But the demonization of these people and the lack of humanity conveyed to them by some is something that I just can't ascribe to.
Well, the situation, too, is some of these people, once they get here, are being forced into labor issues or, you know, sexual trafficking type issues. And they, to my opinion, is kind of jump from the frying pan into the fire when they get stuck in a situation like this.
Yeah, the sexual victimization of women and girls that are coming across the border is significantly underreported. We know it exists. You know, we hear these things that women coming across the border essentially expect to be sexually assaulted, and that's kind of the price of admission. You know, the financial victimization of these folks is horrific. I mean, the drug cartels make almost as much money trafficking humans as they do trafficking drugs. Well, this is a human rights issue, and the one thing I've banged away when my discussions in Washington, D.C. is we need to talk about that aspect more, because that's something everybody could get behind, is let's secure the border to dissuade people from engaging in what is a very dangerous and perilous activity, which is entering this country illegally. And I wish there was more dialogue out of Washington, D.C. on that being a prevailing reason why we need to secure the border. I was interviewed by a newspaper in El Salvador a little over a year ago, and the person interviewing me said, "Well, Sheriff, do you have any last comments that you'd like to make to the people of El Salvador?" And I said, "Yes, I love you, but do not come. It's dangerous. I don't want to find your bones in the desert of my county.
Yes,
I realize you're in desperate circumstances, but my affection for you as human beings would tell me to tell you not to come. And I'm so very sorry for this circumstance that you find yourself in, but I don't want to find you dead in the desert." And we're doing that too often, recovering bones and human remains out in the desert. We'll never know, Sherry, how many bodies are out there.
That's true.
We know that we find, you know, 50 or 100 a year between us and Border Patrol, but we don't know how many people are out there. And when we find bones, you can look at that like you're on a National Geographic thing, but that's somebody's brother, that's somebody's mother, it's somebody's son, it's somebody's father. That was a human being, and we'll never know what happened to them. In all likelihood, their family will never know what happened to them.
And you can't identify them. If you don't have, you know, the database that they're in, you can't identify them.
Yeah, no, and it's very hard, because a lot of times by the time we find the bones, they've been scattered by, you know, animal coyotes. And so you might find a leg bone and a skull or a jaw bone, and the rest of the bones are scattered all over the place. and there is no way to really identify all that somebody, think about this. If your father left you in El Salvador 2 years ago, and that was the last you ever heard or saw of him, and you never had closure, you never knew what happened. Did he make it to America, and did he get work, and he's just not able to get us? What happened to him? And you never know, or your son, or your daughter. Come on, folks. This is a human rights issue.
Yeah.
We need to focus on it like that. It, as you know, my son-in-law's heritage, Francisco, is from El Salvador. That's where his family was from. And so this is part of my family also.
So what is your vision for the Sheriff's Department for the next 4 years?
To keep us moving forward, we have made great strides, but we're not not where we need to spike the ball and do our victory dance yet. We still need to be very conscious of our fiscal management. We need to engage in more proactive and innovative crime control programs. We need to significantly, with our ACT plan, ramp up our community engagement and our law enforcement reform efforts. We need to work hard on recruiting. It's a very challenging environment to bring people and the right people in the door and then to keep them. We need to find a path forward on compensation reform. Currently, there is no compensation plan for deputies and corrections officers. There is no plan. And the worst imaginable plan is no plan. We need to quit fighting each other and sit down and work on that. I have a great relationship with the county administrator and the Board of Supervisors. But all I can do is go and make proposals for, you know, what compensation increases I think we can financially absorb. But it's up to the Board of Supervisors and the county administrator what raises occur.
What happens if we get a whole new board for the county supervisors? I know that it's on the election thing for November.
Well, I think the thing that you need to do is you need to have a sheriff that is in office that has business acumen, that can run a business. And really, I see myself far less as a cop these days than I do as the CEO of a big business. And that the Sheriff's Department is a big business. We employ nearly 1,500 people. We have a budget of $160 million, service area of 9,200 square miles, and we operate 24/7, 365 with millions of dollars of fixed assets. I am running a very big business. And I think that's why I get along quite well with Mr. Huckleberry, because he's a business person, and I speak business. So when he and I sit down, that's what we talk about. We talk about the business of the Sheriff's Department. And we've been successful. We're buying two new airplanes that we'll have probably by the end of the year. I've been successful in making our deputies and corrections officers entry-level pay among the highest in the state. We've given $5 million in compensation increases to our staff while showing budget surpluses over the last 3 years of more than $13 million. Not in the red, in the black. And almost every budget year before I took office, we were in the red. That's not any way to run the Sheriff's Department. And how in the world, Sherry, can you argue for compensation increases for your people if you can't even prove you spend the money that you currently have right?
True.
You can't. It's nonsense. So I'd like to continue to see us move forward. I'd like to serve our county as one more term as your sheriff, and then I'm in all likelihood going to retire. That'll be about 43 years since I started. And it's probably time to engage in the next occupation, which I would have, which would be professional grandpa. But people can go to my website, which is really easy. It's SheriffNapier2020.org, SheriffNapier2020.org. That's one word. We appreciate all donations. Campaigns require money to operate. That's just a fact. But you can see our long list of endorsements. We just picked up a couple of new ones this past week, which I'm really proud of. Sheriff Ed Honey of Marana, Sheriff Tom Murphy of Sarita, Jesse Lugo, community leader, well-respected. I just love Jesse and everything that he does for our community. Mayor Joe Winfield of Oral Valley, Barbara LaWall, our county attorney, the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, and an endorsement of the Pima County Sheriff's Department command staff. So we're moving in the right direction. I've got the endorsement of all the sheriffs whose counties are about ours. every sheriff in Southern Arizona. So we're doing a lot that's good. We just need a little more support, and we'll get it over the finish line and have another good 4 years.
You know what? I would pay to watch you do a victory dance.
I might pay to do that, too. But I love this county. I love public service, and I look forward to 4 more years.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. And until next week, shop local, stay safe.